This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Well, it's been a month since the Marathon bombings, and in that time, we've heard many stories about what went right in that incredible week. Volunteers at the scene, doctors at the hospital, and the investigation that quickly identified the Tsarnaev brothers. And in a moment, we'll hear another riveting first-person account from the police officer who was the first to engage the Tsarnaev brothers on the night of the Watertown shootout.
But today, we're also hearing allegations about things that went wrong. The Boston Globe reports that 13 of 14 deputy chiefs from the Boston Fire Department are sharply criticizing their supervisor, Fire Chief Steve Abrera. In a scathing letter written to Mayor Menino, the deputies claim Abrera's leadership was inadequate and that he failed to take action after the Marathon bombings.
Joining us now is Mike Bello, assistant metro editor at the Boston Globe. Mike, good to have you.
Good afternoon.
So let me ask you, the letter that these deputy chiefs wrote is dated just a mere 11 days after the April 15th bombings. What are they claiming that Chief Abrera did not do?
Well, they're essentially saying it's a vote of no confidence in Chief Abrera. They're strongly criticizing his alleged inactions after the bombings. They write that he failed to assume command responsibility at the scene on April 15th or show any leadership. They wrote in their letter that he later told department members that he had felt the command staff had the scene under control. They didn't need to take control. They claim that his justification for failing to take action is indefensible. He talked in the letter that deputy chiefs talk about Abrera arriving at the scene on Boylston Street and that he needed to control the situation, that firefighters were still involved in dealing with the possibility of additional explosions, more suspicious packages, possible structural concerns for building, that he needed to take charge, and he didn't. Mm-hmm. Now, Abrera fired back in a phone interview yesterday, says that the command staff had control of the scene when he arrived and that he acted appropriately. He was comfortable with the situation.
So, Mike, in the Herald, I read that they quote a part of the letter as calling Abrera a ghost fire chief. But as you mentioned in Abrera's response to the Globe, when the Globe asked him about it, that he also mentioned that a while ago he had deliberately changed protocols such that the highest ranking officer on the scene no longer needed to be the one in charge. And in fact, I also look back at the Globe's old coverage of when he was hired back in 2011. And one of the reasons why he's the first person from outside of Boston to be the fire chief for the Boston Fire Department, he's quoted as being an independent thinker. So in a way, he was doing exactly what he was hired for. I mean, is that reading too much into the situation?
Well, I think he views himself as the guy who does the big picture. He's there to make sure everything goes okay. He leaves the incident command to the deputy chief at the scene. In the past, where fire chiefs obviously came up through the ranks in the Boston Fire Department, there was the tradition of the fire chief taking control at the scene after like a 3 or 4 alarm fire, that fire chief would take control and basically run the fighting of that fire. Abrera has instituted a different policy. He kind of wants to make sure everything's going okay, but leaves the deputy chief on the scene to manage the fire. Mm. And the deputy chief's obviously saying that's not the way it should be. They cite another incident in East Boston where he was at the scene of a fire and he claimed that he was trying to take a picture of himself with the fire in the background. Abrera denies that. So there's been a lot of tension. It's interesting because we got Mayor Menino this afternoon on this incident.
Yeah,
what's
what
been
was
going
his
on.
Response?
And he basically defended the fire chief, questions the timing of the deputy chief's letter, says that Boston has been particularly unified in the aftermath of the bombings. You know, his quote was, if it was an issue at the time, why wasn't it brought to our attention immediately? To have a letter like that surface a month later, I wonder. He also notes that he hired the first chief from outside the department, that there's a long history of tension between elements of the fire department and authority.
Interesting. And we've just got a couple seconds left, Mike, but nevertheless, 13 deputy fire chiefs signed on to this letter. That seems to be, scathing at the very least and unprecedented.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of tension in the department between Abrera and the deputy chiefs. It's been brewing for a while. I think Mayor Menino wants to tamp it down. I mean, he said this afternoon that he is going to have the fire commissioner look at what the protocols are to make sure everything is being handled properly. But he did back the fire chief and is backing the fire commissioner. And the reality is, when the new mayor comes in, who knows what's going to happen?
Hmm.
So everything could change after the Menino administration is gone. But for right now, there's a lot of tension, and they're trying to cool things down.
Mike Bello is the assistant metro editor for the Boston Globe. Mike, thanks so much.
Thank you.
1 month after the Marathon bombings, new details about the attacks and the ensuing investigation continue to emerge. Now WBUR's Bruce Gellerman has a story about one police officer who played a pivotal role in the dramatic shootout in Watertown following the pursuit of the two bombing suspects.
Laurel Street is in your typical workaday Watertown neighborhood. It's lined with one and two family homes, perhaps smaller yards and maybe fewer trees than on many streets, but take a closer look, and you'll see evidence that will forever make Laurel Street unique.
If you look down the fence line, you can see all the bullet holes coming down the fence line, a couple in the tree. And I was reloading.
Wow, look at that.
Yeah, this house got hit 10 times.
Sergeant John McClellan has been on the Watertown Police Force for 23 years, and never has he had a night like the one that started late April 18th. Then again, according to the federal ATF, until then, neither had any other police officer in the U.S.
You know, in America, this has never, ever happened in the history of the United States, ever. No officers have ever taken bombs thrown at them in a gunfight. You can't even think that through, you know. So we were lucky that it worked out the way it did. And you know, the good guys are where they should be and the bad guys are where they should be, as far as I'm concerned.
Sergeant McClellan has a straightforward worldview. There are good guys and there are bad guys. But for those of us who saw first responders in action after the Boston bombings and the Watertown shootout, there are people like John McClellan. This is his story.
Watertown Control. Watertown Control, all units. Stay clear of the radio with the extension of 468.
That's Sergeant McClellan on the police scanner. He was born and raised in Watertown. Just before midnight on April 18th, he was working his shift as night patrol supervisor when Cambridge PD radioed to say a hijacked Mercedes SUV was heading his way.
Being the patrol supervisor when you have an incident like that, I'm the only one who's supposed to talk on the radio to the dispatchers. Everything goes through me.
And now the vehicle's moving now, units. In the area of 89 Dexter.
Watertown officer Joe Reynolds hears McClellan on the scanner. Reynolds is just going off duty, but he sees the SUV in a green Honda turn off Dexter. Reynolds is the first on the scene. Sergeant McClellan is right behind.
I said, Joe, hold off. Don't pull it over until I get there. As I said that, the vehicles took a left-hand turn onto here, onto Laurel. They ended up down there about close to 100 yards down the street with Joe Reynolds about 30 feet behind them. I see a male exit the vehicle. Arm raised, shooting position. I hear the pop, pop, pop.
Sergeant McClellan and Officer Reynolds take out their Glock handguns. Between them, they've got five clips, 67 bullets total.
So I'm shooting, and I have a shoulder mic, and I'm talking on the shoulder mic and shooting down range.
Shot fired.
I take a round right through the windshield. Right through my windshield, right through my headrest of my driver's side. But I reach down, I'm trying to get my patrol rifle, which is a civilian version of the M16. I tried two or three times, but I can hear the rounds hitting my vehicle.
Did you know who it was at this point?
We have no idea. We thought that it was just a carjacking, that, you know, when we pull these kids over, they're going to bail out and we're going to chase them and we're going to catch them and that's going to be it. It just turned out a little different.
To say the least, John McClellan releases the handbrake on his patrol car, puts it in drive, and jumps from the vehicle and hides behind a tree. The police car stops right next to the hijacked Mercedes SUV. The younger suspect throws clips of bullets to the older suspect, then unloads three backpacks from the Honda.
They come out from behind the Mercedes and engage the vehicle. They think someone's in it, and they're firing at it. Boom, 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 firing at the vehicle. At this point, they throw the first bomb. Boom. What was that? You know, I got on the radio and I actually said on the radio, bigger than an M80. I'm not sure what it was.
Might have been bigger than an M80.
That's when the second bomb goes off and throws it up, and it's a large pipe bomb.
McClellan hides behind one of the only trees on Laurel Street. It's just 3.5 minutes into the shootout. Sergeant Jeff Pugliese shows up. He's 10 feet from the older suspect. They exchange gunfire. The suspect runs out of ammunition and then starts charging Sergeant McClellan.
I'm out here and I'm drawing down on him and I said, I said, I'm going to kill you, get on the ground. I'm going to shoot you, get on the ground. Now I have an empty gun. I don't have any ammo at all. So I'm like, you know, I'm just bluffing him, hoping he's going to get down to the ground. He's not taking. He's coming right at me. Jeff Pugliese, the sergeant, jumps on his back. As soon as he jumps on his back, he just collapses him to the ground. The guy's been shot quite a few times, drops him to the ground. And then my only thought at that point was, this guy's throwing bombs at us. He's either strapped or he's got another one, or his brother's got a button. As soon as we get on him, he's going to blow us up. I'm like, no way. I couldn't let him do it by himself. The only thought running through my head is, you know, I'm the supervisor of this guy. I can't let this guy go by himself. I got to help him. So I jump on top and I try to get his hand. He's got one arm and I'm going for the other arm. And I hear, "Sarge, here he comes, watch out." And I look back and I see the lights of the Mercedes facing us. And the car just, it seemed like half a second it was on top of us. I go, "Jeff, here he comes, watch out." I push off the body. He pushes off the body and the brother runs, misses both of us and runs over his brother. He gets caught up underneath the car, drags him, as you can see, drags him about, I believe it was like 60 feet, and releases him. When he hits the cruiser, he hits up one of our cruisers and releases the body.
This is only part of Sergeant John McClellan's story from that night just about a month ago. There's a lot more. Immediately after the shootout, he and six other Watertown police officers who were in the thick of it went on leave for 2 weeks. They all received counseling, were debriefed by investigators, and are back on the job.
That story from WBUR's Bruce Gellerman. And as Bruce said, there is a lot more to Sergeant John McClellan's story. You can hear Bruce's complete interview with him at WBUR.org.